This is 87.9 Pirate Cat Radio. You can hear us in SF in LA on 87.9 and 104.8 in Berlin, all over the web as piratecatradio.com. And right now, we're about to get started with our interview here during Brood of the Mau Mau, taken over by Subversive Science. I have Linda Stone on the line. Linda, are you there?
Hi.
Hey, nice to hear from you.
Nice to be with you, Naomi.
Awesome. So Linda is a longtime blogger and author and speaker. I first encountered you through the IDEA conference 2006, where you were talking about continuous partial attention. And later, you have come up with an idea that you've labeled email apnea. I wonder if you'd introduce that yourself, actually.
I'd love to. Thank you. Email apnea is, the way that I define it, is temporary cessation of breath or shallow breathing while in front of any screen. I call it email apnea because I first noticed it when I was doing email. I noticed that I had been out exercising and then came in and had started doing some breathing exercises. And when I went to the computer and started doing email, I noticed that I was holding my breath. And after a few days of doing this, I thought, oh, my God, how common is this? Am I the only one doing this? And it's pretty easy to see if people are doing it or not, because typically a person's posture is pretty compromised when they're either on a mobile device at the computer or often in front of a television set, which is why it really is about any screen. And what happens is your posture is somewhat compromised. You can't get a full diaphragmatic breath in, and you either breath hold or shallow breathe. And when you do this over a long period of time, it puts your body into what's called a fight or flight state. It upregulates your sympathetic nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system being all about fight or flight. So there you are, sitting at a computer, sitting in front of a TV, working on your mobile device, and you're not running from a predator. Instead, you're sitting there, but your body is starting to produce resources to prepare you for fight or flight.
Mm. So basically, this state of hyperventilation is normally we associate with that with sort of a fear response, right? So you've got this instant reaction that you've got to respond to the stress that's right in front of you. And we think of that as a result of being in stress. But what you're saying is it actually goes the other way, that when you induce that breathing state.
One of the very interesting things that I've learned in researching, you know, what happens physiologically to the body when we go into fight or flight, one of the interesting things I've learned is that breathing and emotion are what I would call commutative, and attention and breathing are commutative. That is, if you have a certain emotion, it's paired with a certain type of breathing. If you have a certain attention pattern, that's paired with a certain breathing pattern. And it works vice versa. So if you have a certain emotion, you'll breathe a certain way. If you breathe a certain way, it will cause you to have that emotion that is related to that type of breathing. So that's why if you are scared, someone might tell you to breathe or to take a deep breath or to take, and take a deep breath. Unfortunately, with that phrase, what we often do is we think that means inhale, and what really helps is the exhale. The exhale is the key, not the inhale. And so if we're afraid, and this is true of all mammals, if you're afraid, you tend to do an inhale, which then makes you very quiet. It's sort of like, I'm surprised, I'm afraid. You inhale, and then your hearing becomes more acute, your senses become a little more acute, so that if you are in danger, you'll hear it, again, true of all mammals. And what happens to us when we're at the computer is we never quite exhale. We just keep, you know, the more emails that flood in or the more we feel we have to do, we're, you know, doing that sharp inhale, holding our breath as we get through things, and we're holding ourselves in this low-level fight-or-flight state.
So I wonder if physiologically this means that you're reserving a whole lot of carbon dioxide and nitrogen in the bottom of the lungs when you do that, because you're not fully exhaling.
I can't tell you exactly what's happening there, because respiratory physiology is so complicated. What I can tell you is that we are undermining the balance of carbon dioxide, oxygen, CO2. There are whole books that are written on nitric oxide and on carbon dioxide. The whole Buteyko breathing technique is all about carbon dioxide and ensuring that our bodies have an appropriate balance of carbon dioxide, oxygen, and nitric oxide. So, again, it respiratory physiology becomes quite complicated. So I'll stick with you're undermining that balance. But there's something else that's happening that is really interesting and that was reported only a few months ago in the journal Science, and it's research from the Life and Health Sciences Research Institute in Portugal. And one of the things that their experiments showed was that when they had chronically stressed rats, the rats would then, you know, with that chronic stress, would then begin to do things compulsively. So they would compulsively press a food bar for food pellets, even if they had no intention of eating. They would begin to do behaviors in a habitual way. And, you know, the underlying theme there, the thing that this group of scientists led by a Dr. Sousa, S-O-U-S-A, the thing that the scientists realized was that the regions of the brain that are associated with executive decision-making, goal-oriented behaviors, began to shrivel, and the brain sectors linked to habit formation were blooming, were becoming larger. And so one of the things that happens to us when we're in this state of chronic stress, even if it's chronic low-level stress, is that the parts of the brain that are linked with habit formation become larger, and our ability to direct our behaviors begins to diminish. One of the other things that, again, is fascinating in this group's research is that our brains are so plastic that as soon as we interrupt this cycle, and you can do this with a breathing technique that upregulates the parasympathetic or rest and digest nervous system, as soon as this begins to get interrupted, you can absolutely, totally shift everything that is happening. Our brains are extremely plastic, so you can begin to create new pathways, and you can shift your response.
Yeah, actually, this resonates quite a bit with my martial arts training, where they would put the emphasis on exhalation. And not only was it for relaxation and for dissipation of fear, it was also to create the most powerful punch, the most powerful kick, and so on and so forth. And so I see that I see a trend in physiology research and medical research toward and psychology towards sort of validating these physiological models that people came up with gradually over time.
Well, I love that you're bringing up martial arts. One of the things that I've also found very interesting as I've done this research on email apnea is that the people who typically do not have email apnea are athletes, musicians, dancers, singers, people who have trained in a breathing practice that, as you say, involves really understanding how to exhale and managing that exhale so that excuse me, so that you can learn to re-regulate your autonomic nervous system. And one of the things that that does, and again, I'm, you know, still diving into the research on this, one of the things that happens when you're shallow breathing is you become more impulsive. You have access to your intelligence that's neck up. But we also have a tremendous amount of intelligence in our bodies. And when you're exhaling, when your parasympathetic nervous system is somewhat upregulated and you can access the wisdom of your whole body, you operate very differently. I'm sure that you've noticed this when you do martial arts, that if you're breathing shallowly and you're you're in a state of fear, you operate impulsively, and it may not be with the same, I want to say almost depth of response or confidence that you would have if you were exhaling, managing your breathing,
right,
and able to have access to the wisdom in your entire body.
Right. Well, it is one of the first things that they teach, that any sensei will teach their students, is you start with the breath. I mean, a good sensei will do that. Relax. Even in a state of readiness and awareness, you're supposed to be relaxing. And it almost seems counterintuitive to our culture's the way that we look at what it means to be at full attention, or what it means to be focusing really hard or thinking really hard. We associate these things with like trying, with like maybe squinting, you know, like kind of trying to push those thoughts out of your head somehow. Like if you just try really hard, it'll happen. But it seems to be like completely the opposite.
It's a good point that you're making. One of the things that I sometimes talk about when I give talks on this is that if somebody says to you, pay attention or relax, those things are commands. And often we tense up when they say that. Well, how do I do that? What do I need to do? If I teach a group, you know, which takes 2 minutes, a breathing technique that helps them upregulate their parasympathetic or rest and digest nervous system, that absolutely can take them where they need to go. So maybe instead of saying pay attention, or instead of saying relax, we can learn breathing techniques that can take us where we want to go. Mm. And further, I mean, the other thing that I found is that the command relax, it's not a feeling or a sense. But if you say to someone, melt, you know, take a minute and just melt, feel your face melt, feel your shoulders melt, that's a sense that people can embody in a way. And we've moved our language to a place where we are all about doing and acting, and less about sensing and feeling. And there's so much intelligence for us to tap in our sensing and feeling.
Mm. Right, absolutely. My mother has been getting into music therapy. She's been a voice teacher for a very long time, and a big fan of the Alexander technique, which you're probably, I mean, it's very similar to the Butenko precepts. And she's found, I had a little brother who was autistic, and so she got very interested in helping disabled kids and improving their cognition through physiological therapy and through music therapy. And she has found that just by teaching breathing, just by encouraging kids to sing properly and thereby to breathe properly, that they're much calmer, as you might expect. They do better on simple tests of simple intelligence tests. I'm not, you know, I don't have the specifics in front of me, but everything improves about their lives, about their, you know, about their interactions with their parents and things like that.
Well, I'd love to talk to your mom sometime. There is one scientist, Stephen Porges, who has written a lot on what he calls a polyvagal theory, and he's linked up with a few other folks in healthcare, physicians, who work with autistic and autistic kids and kids with ADD, focusing on vagus nerve and vagus nerve response. The vagus nerve is one of the main cranial nerves, and it's one of the key regulators of the autonomic nervous system. And so if you're focused on working toward re-regulating the autonomic nervous system, you can make, you know, quite significant shifts. And, you know, as you mentioned this, one of the things that I often again talk about when I give talks is how it would be so beneficial for kids in schools to learn specific breathing techniques. And if they even had 3 10-minute breathing breaks in a day, it would, I think, dramatically change our ability in a good way to pay attention, to use our attention well. It would enhance performance. There is research that's been done on doing anagrams, for example, either in a lying down position or in a standing up position. And one of the things that was so interesting about the results is that people lying down solved anagrams more quickly than people standing up. And, you know, people were able to solve the anagrams either lying down or standing up, but people were so much faster performing when they were lying down. Of course, when they were lying down, their posture was supported. They could get a diaphragmatic breath in, and they were in a less stressed state.
Hmm.
So there are bits and pieces of evidence, as this information is being worked with by different scientific groups. One of the other things that's been interesting for me is to read some of the literature on sleep apnea. I think that we're becoming much more sensitive to breathing and what breathing does for us through the issues that are happening with sleep apnea.
I would hope so. I would hope so. I'm not sure what the outlook is for 10-minute breaks in schools for breathing breaks, just with the trajectory of things. I mean, people are so worried about, like, oh, we got to get the science into kids' brains. We got to get the maths in kids' brains. And, our culture is one of those of sort of forcing things into existence. And as you said, with the anagrams example, it seems to me that there are many, many functionalities of the human brain, human body, that require relaxation to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Again, seems counter.
Healing, for example.
Healing.
One of the things that we know about healing is that it happens in a relaxed body when lymph and blood can really flow and the body can self-heal.
What do you suppose would be the implications of a society that really takes all this to heart, that sits up straight, or maybe doesn't even sit so much at all?
Well, again, I would say, you know, if someone said to you, sit up straight, or someone said to you, inhale to the count of three, hold to the count of five, exhale to the count of eight, which of those directions is easier to follow?
Mm.
And which of those directions holds you in a slightly more relaxed state? When we're told to sit up straight, sometimes that tenses us quite a bit. But I'm really interested in, you know, what a future office environment could be. For example, Steelcase, in the last year or so, developed something called the Walk Station. It costs in excess of $5,000. It's not a realistic purchase for many. And for the most part, it was developed in collaboration with someone at the Mayo Clinic. It's their main focus on their research so far has been on thermogenesis, or how it helps people manage weight. You're walking at under 2 miles an hour while you're working, and while I haven't done this over time, apparently people find that they can work like this. A standing office is an office where people typically have better posture and are more likely to breathe, and there are certain types of chairs that have been designed to support this better. But sitting is as you mentioned, is a tough posture. But I think it would be fantastic to be, to rethink what an office environment was, so that we had flexible ways of standing, sitting, moving, working, and potentially some biofeedback or just feedback built in. If it's biofeedback, it can, you know, let us know, has our pulse quickened to the point where we may be holding our breath. If it's just feedback, one of the most, you know, powerful and interesting examples of just being able to get feedback in a way that changes our behavior is the Toyota Prius. And, you know, when you get into the Toyota Prius, it doesn't say, sit up straight, take your foot off the gas, you jerk. It instead just has a little display, and we maintain all the, you know, locus of control, and the display gives us feedback, and we use the wisdom of our body to figure out how this interaction with the car can shift what happens on the display, so we get feedback. So I think, you know, at this moment, a lot of what we do to try to change our behavior has aspects of punishment and directives and all of this involved. And really, when you look at the Prius, it's so effective. And what's it doing? It's leaving the locus of control with the driver, and it's got a playful interaction where there's some data going back. You know, what kinds of things could be done in an office setting that would give us feedback in this way and allow us to stay embodied while we work at the computer. I know one of the things that happens to me at a computer is, you know, I will often get so into what I'm doing that all the energy drains out of my body and the computer is totally animated. And, you know, someone watching me would say, wow, that was interesting. You know, you just left your body and the computer's on fire, you know. And I am so excited about the prospect of a relationship with the technology in my life where I can stay embodied and yet still use these incredibly powerful tools that I, you know, I wouldn't want to live without them. They're just amazing in terms of what they've offered us.
And we had a speaker here.
They offer to us. And at the same time, I want to stay embodied so that the things that I, you know, came to Earth with in terms of the intelligence of my full body and so forth are also there when I'm using and working with technology.
I'm with you that far from cell phones taking over our lives and things like that, which may or may not be the case, arguably, but I think that everything just needs to go faster. I get so frustrated with the delays, and you end up staring at your device waiting for things to happen so long. That for me is the feeling of enslavement to the device, not the fact that it's that I have abstracted a lot of the communications that I do as a human being, and sort of mapped that device into my blueprint of how I interact with the world. I don't see that as the problem at all. You know, I think that everything just needs to get better. We had a speaker here a few months back, a professor of rhetoric from UC Berkeley, who described capitalism and the corporate situation as a continual process of disembodying ourselves. So we are abstracted farther and farther from our regular human bodies, you know, our meat forms, to the point where we no longer have desires when we go to work. And we are, you know, our health suffers, but it's for the benefit of the organization going forward. And so he sees the organization and capitalism itself as a selfish, needy organism that is co-opting our bodies for its own progression.
So I would bring the responsibility in a little closer. And, you know, one of the things that I have thought about, I didn't figure out until recently why the term information overload was didn't totally work for me. And then as I started to learn more about and work with this concept of email apnea, one of the things that I learned is that when your sympathetic or fight or flight nervous system is upregulated, is very active and upregulated, that one of the things that happens is you lose your sense of satiety. It's your rest and digest or parasympathetic nervous system that gives you a sense of satiety. So if you sit down at a meal, if you take a few minutes and do a breathing technique where the exhale is twice as long as the inhale, or where you're, you know, breathing only, you know, inhaling, exhaling 5 or 6 times a minute, instead of, you know, 12 or 15, you are much more embodied and much more aware of when you're full versus when you're hungry. Mm. When you're in this chronic state of low-level fight or flight, one of the things that happens to us in that state is we don't know when we're sated. We don't know when we really need more, and we tend to just, you know, it's as if we're being chased by a predator. We tend to just grab at whatever resources we can as we go in this state of, you know, low-level panic, low-level fight or flight.
Yeah.
And so, it, you know, when I look at information overload, what I think instead is more accurate is information overconsumption. It's an overconsumption of everything.
Hmm.
And if we look at what's happened to us in the last 20 years, we overconsume food. We overconsume information. It's as if we don't know when to stop. We are like those rats that I talked about earlier that are pressing a bar for food pellets that we have no intention of eating, or that we eat mindlessly because we don't have a sense of when we're sated. And so you know, when I think about this, instead of blaming the information, there's too much information out there, you know, blame the information, I would say let's bring it in a little closer. And it's astonishing to me, we don't really need a pharmaceutical, we don't need, you know, all of these, you know, extra things. It's cheap, it's, you know, in fact, it's free, it's easy. You know, we would benefit tremendously by learning some very simple breathing techniques. Wow. One of the breathing techniques that Andy Weil teaches, and he has a great breathing CD. One of the techniques that he teaches involves inhaling for four, holding to the count of seven, and then doing a very slow exhale to the count of eight. That's one of the ways that you can regulate, re-regulate your autonomic nervous system. Sometimes I teach one that's, you know, very simple, where you inhale to the count of three or four, hold for two, exhale twice as long as the inhale to six or to eight. And if you, you know, if you do these even just a few times for 5 minutes here and there during the day, it will absolutely start to shift.
And that's really interesting. I mean, that directly echoes the sorts of things that we did in martial arts, like before and we ended our training, before we started our training. Just these perfectly directed exercises that, you know, when you're in it for the first time and you don't know what's going on, they're just telling you what to do and you're like, this is stupid. You know, how is it directly applicable? But if the implications of what you're saying are true, it could, I mean, if what you're saying is true, the implications could be things like, you know, why are we so fat? Why are we overconsuming? Why are we just reaching for food as emotional satiety? And also, similarly, why are we never done with the browser? Why are we never done on Twitter?
Because we're like those rats that are continuing to press the bar for food pellets compulsively, because this habit part of our brain has bloomed and the part of our brain that would allow us to regulate is diminishing as we perpetuate this low-level fight or flight. I have also, like you, been very curious about this connection. You know, gee, it's been the last 20 years that we have really seen an increase in digestive diseases, in stress-related diseases, and in weight. And I think that food is part of the issue, but again, my sense is, you know, what if we did, you know, 10 minutes of breathing three times a day, like the breathing that you learn in martial arts, or the breathing that a musician learns in order to perform or play an instrument or sing, or the breathing that an actor learns or a dancer learns. This absolutely can shift so many aspects of our behavior. And again, you know, I don't think it's such a long shot that we would do it in school, because it's so contributory to enhanced performance and enhanced attention. If a teacher spent 10 minutes with kids after recess doing a breathing technique and then had calm, focused kids for the next 3 hours, is that 10 minutes a waste?
Oh, I can totally see the reason for it.
In terms of classroom management,
I'm a little bit cynical about it when I hear things like they're going to cut out PE and cut out recess, things like that.
PE and art and music, the things that make us human.
Right.
Right.
So, I mean, if we're cutting out exercise, which we know has positive effects on the body and the mind.
Correct.
You know, I mean, I'm totally with you.
Yeah, Prop 13 was really a tough one for California.
Yeah. So what do you see as the prospects for propagation of this kind of information and research into, for instance, doctors' offices?
I feel incredibly heartened. Many psychologists and physicians, actually, after I posted my first piece on email apnea, many psychologists and physicians contacted me and said that they were so fascinated by this that they printed that out and they have it available in their waiting room.
Oh, wow.
I'm doing a lot more writing now, more writing than I am posting, but I'll have, you know, I expect to have more stuff up in the next few months on all this. I think, you know, I think we're at a point where, as you know, as things like yoga and meditation become more mainstream and are considered, you know, less fringy, people will also be more open to understanding what the benefits of breathing are. There's certainly many many books on this subject, and again, many are done in a way where there's really solid science. One of my favorite ones is a book called Perfect Breathing by Al Lee. But there are, you know, many books, Daniel Lewis, Free Your Breath, Free Your Life, The Inner Game of Stress by Tim Galway, Mystic Cool by Joseph Goway. There are more and more books beginning to come out that talk about the power of breathing in terms of re-regulating attention, mm-hmm. emotion, and the contribution that breathing can make to cognition, as well as potentially offering a how-to element.
Yeah, it seems to me the difficulty in getting this information out to the public and through doctors and things like that is just that there's so much, and it seems to be distributed across a whole lot of different disciplines, like from cognitive science to physiology, medical science.
It's interdisciplinary, which is one of the things that makes it fascinating to me.
Well, it's one of the things that...
It's been an incredibly rich area of study, and I so appreciate your interest in it.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those things that someone like you can coalesce and make a really big difference in
Thank
people's
you.
Lives with. So
Thank you.
It's been awesome to have you on our show. I hope everything was enjoyable, and it would be great to talk to you again sometime.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I'd love to join you again. Take care.
Thanks. Bye. And that was Linda Stone, author of Email Apnea and Continuous Partial Attention. And that nearly about wraps it up for Subversive Science. I'm DJ Prefect, and we're going to make way for the next show with Gary. And he's going to have some live music. He's been setting that up. So if you heard some loud whacking and wire grabbing in the background, that was him. There's not really a good way to stop him when he's, you know, he's on a mission. I have another PSA to read. So here we go. The National Lawyers Guild. The National Lawyers Guild is dedicated to the need for basic change in the structure of our political and economic system. They seek to unite the lawyers, law students, legal workers, and jailhouse lawyers of America to function as an effective political and social force in the service of the people, to the end the human rights shall be regarded as more sacred than property interests. For more information about your legal rights, how to obtain legal assistance, or to donate, contact the National Lawyers Guild at nlgsf.org. This PSA was brought to you from your friends at Pirate Cat Radio 87.9 FM. Again, really special thanks to Linda Stone for agreeing to do this interview. We had a lot of fun talking to her. You can find her lindastone.com, I believe, and she's written some blog posts on Huffington Post and many other places. If you want to hear her talk on continuous partial attention, which I definitely recommend, search Google for IDEA Conference 2006. She was the keynote speaker there, and she's definitely on the right path, I feel, to doing the work of integrating many different disciplines. Something that, while I was at the UCSF this past weekend, every scientist there was stuck in their kind of silo of information. They all sort of agreed that, like, yeah, I don't get any opportunities to, like, interact with other disciplines, and it's really great when people come along and sort of spread information from other disciplines to us and get us interested and let us know what's happening in other fields. So I'm going to play some Moldover for you from his new EP. What is this one called? This one's called Say It, where he uses a speak and spell along with his Arduino homebrew machines. This is Pirate Cat Radio 87.9 FM.